Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The longer Wisconsin's standoff between the governor and the public sector unions drags on, the deeper the whole nation is getting into a conversation about what's fair, what's right, what's affordable in the way employees and bosses and taxpayers do business. Maybe everybody's got a point. Maybe this argument will turn out to be productive. We'll see. Right now, it's still raging. This hour on Point, the battle in Wisconsin and where it points the nation. You can join the conversation. Where do you see this going? New understanding? New confrontation? Is there a breakthrough here? To what? You can comment on our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. The gloves have really come off. Last Wednesday, the Republican National Committee began airing a TV ad in Wisconsin backing Governor Scott Walker's effort to strip state workers of collective bargaining powers.
Families are struggling, state budgets have run dry, and the federal debt is skyrocketing. But Obama and the union bosses are standing in the way of economic reform, intimidating taxpayers, leaving classrooms empty. They made this mess. Let's clean it up. Stop Obama and his union bosses today.
Obama and his union bosses. Okay, a labor-backed group called Greater Wisconsin has started running a new ad of its own in Wisconsin. The Washington Post reports the ad is backed by a significant buy, and it hits hard at Governor Scott Walker.
Governor Walker is refusing to negotiate. He's insisting on his budget his way. But his budget is devastating for the middle class. $900 million cut from our schools, the deepest in state history. $500 million slashed from our health care. Drastic cuts that will endanger police and fire protection. Governor Walker's budget is devastating, and so are state senators who blindly follow him.
And the whole nation is paying attention. A poll from New York Times, CBS News, said that Americans oppose weakening the bargaining rights of public employee unions by a margin nearly 2-1, 60% to 33%. At the same time, they're worried about fiscal realities. Here's Republican Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. He's been a big voice on the right, taking on public sector unions and their collective bargaining powers. He got into a testy exchange, interesting, last Monday on CBS. He was asked about that CBS New York Times poll showing most Americans oppose cutting public employee benefits and collective bargaining rights as a way to tackle state deficits. Here's how he replied.
Collective bargaining rights is not an issue in my state, and it's not an issue in most states. I understand you guys, it's an entertaining story, and you want to keep it going, so I'm sure you worded a poll in a way that kept it going. So it's fine, I could word a poll and get it. I can go out and word a poll.
Let me finish now.
I'm the governor. I think I got a better idea on public opinion in my state than CBS News does, tell you the truth. If not, Katie Couric should run for governor of New Jersey.
Katie Couric for governor of New Jersey, but this is all over now. Ohio, it's a big day today. Let's go right to Wisconsin. Jason Stein is Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us from Madison. Jason, thanks very much for being here. Welcome back to On Point.
Hello, Tom. Good to be here.
So there were headlines yesterday saying a deal might be in the works, some kind of meeting, it sounded like, at the DMZ on the Wisconsin-Illinois state line with Governor Walker or his representatives and Wisconsin state senators. Did that happen? I guess it didn't. Why not? What's going on?
Several meetings have happened, and we reported on those. There was one a week ago Monday. There was another one on Wednesday, another one on Sunday. So there have been several meetings between the two sides, between Senate Democrats and the Republican leader in the Senate, Governor Walker's aides. So far nothing has come of them. I mean, there's been a little bit of give on both sides, but they remain, far apart in terms of reaching some sort of compromise that people could be satisfied with in terms of the Democrats coming back. On yesterday, the governor held a press conference, said that the Senate Democrats leader down there was misleading the public, standing in the way of a deal, answering to national union bosses, that sort of thing. And that didn't seem to help move matters along. It sparked some angry reactions from Democrats, in Illinois. So, the governor, over the weekend, there were a lot of polls showing that people wanted both sides to come to a resolution. The governor said he was bargaining, but in terms of actually, you know, furthering the negotiations that yesterday didn't seem to help.
The governor threatened last week big layoffs if he didn't get a concession to his legislation. What about that?
Well, he sent out notices. He sent out notices to unions, in state unions, saying we're going to lay people off around April 1st, not saying how many people or exactly who, but that's the first step in the process. He says that could be halted if some sort of a deal is reached to bring people back. But again, it's unclear, you know, if both sides are going to be able to get a deal that will work, or if Democrats will, you know, simply have to come back, vote on the bill, and then pour their energies into some of these recall efforts that are already underway. Basically, every Wisconsin senator who's eligible for recall just about is facing a recall effort.
We'll look at that, but what kind of resolution? If they came back, as you say, and vote, doesn't that mean a Republican victory? The Democrats would lose here just by the simple numbers in the Senate,
right?
Wouldn't it?
I mean, there's, you know, the Republicans will say things like, well, they need to come back and debate the bill and vote on it. But of course, if they do that, they don't have the votes to amend the bill. They don't have, you know, I mean, they can.
The Democrats don't.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. The Democrats don't have the votes to change the bill. So there's nothing that they're going to be able to do unless they can, you know, strike some sort of a deal to before they come back. But again, what we've reported on, the details that they've been talking about in terms of a mm-hmm. deal, that they're relatively minor things compared to the scope of what Democrats and unions are angry about.
When the Wisconsin polls show Wisconsinites saying they want everybody to come to a resolution, is there any, what does that mean? Compromise?
Well, you know, I mean, the polls that we saw over the weekend, conservative and liberal polling groups both, you know, show that people generally support the idea of having public sector employees pay a little bit more for their benefits and have a little bit less in total compensation as a way to resolve this standoff. But at the same time, they didn't support the idea of public unions losing more of their bargaining authority with government, and that they wanted to see, you know, all sides come to some sort of resolution. I don't think there's, you know, I don't think the public in general wants to see this continue for, you know, another nearly a month, you know, as it has been. So.
Is there any sign that Governor Walker might stand down here? Or does he smell victory and he's going for it? Could it be a costly victory for him with all these recall mm-hmm. petitions out there?
I mean, he on Thursday he gave a little bit for the first time. You know, he said he'd be willing to drop a provision in the bill that makes unions, he kind of signaled that he'd be willing to drop a provision that would make unions vote every year on recertifying, or they'd no longer be active, and they'd have to get 51% of the vote to pass. So he kind of signaled, you know, I don't really need that provision to save money for local governments, but at the same time, there are many, many more things in that bill that unions and Democrats are upset about. You know, in terms of could he, you know, suffer some political losses? Sure, it's possible. You know, there are recalls underway against all Republican senators who are eligible for it. Certainly, it's possible that
And Democrats.
I mean, and there are probably more Republicans that are in mm-hmm. possible jeopardy, but there are also Democrats that are in possible jeopardy. But you know, it's certainly possible that net Republicans could lose seats in the state Senate over this.
The whole country watching for lessons on exactly that front. Jason Stein with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Joining us now from Washington is John Harwood, chief Washington correspondent for CNBC, a columnist for the New York Times. John, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
And from New York, Stephen Greenhouse, labor and workplace reporter for the Times, also the author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. Stephen Greenhouse, welcome.
Nice to be here, Tom.
John Harwood, this is going to be battled out, it seems, in statehouse after statehouse. But what lessons are being drawn at this point of the political win or losses that comes with this battle? Who's winning? Who's losing as this thing rages beyond Wisconsin, John?
Well, I think if the Democratic senators buckle, go back,
and Scott Walker gets the fundamental elements of his bill, as Jason was just describing, some trimming on the edges, you'd have to say it's a victory for Scott Walker. There will be political consequences. I think you're going to see the left and labor energized in a way that they haven't been for a while. You know, you get a president of your party elected and a Congress of your party elected. That sort of dissipates some of the zeal and energy that characterized the 06 and 08 campaigns. I think some of that energy is going to be back. I think there'll be national implications for that. I think that there will be implications in the state of Wisconsin for that in the 2012 presidential race. Whether or not any of the Republican senators or ultimately Scott Walker get recalled.
Stephen Greenhouse, and at this point, you've been writing maybe labor will see a comeback on the back of the energy in response to this bill, but it's a big trend against bargaining, collective bargaining, that we're seeing unfold here. How's labor looking at this so far? You know, big net loss in their face or something else?
It's you know, labor sees it as they're both on the defensive and on the offensive at the same time, in not just in Wisconsin, but in Indiana and in Ohio and in Oklahoma and Tennessee and in many other states. There are efforts, legislative efforts, to reduce their bargaining rights, to reduce their power, to make it easier for workers, not for unionized workers, not to pay dues to their unions. All these measures really sponsored by Republicans to weaken unions and weaken bargaining rights. Weaken unions both at the bargaining table and in electoral politics. But unions, kind of because they've really rallied so much and mobilized so much and have had these huge demonstrations in Madison and also these big demonstrations in Columbus, Ohio and Indianapolis, they feel this surge of electricity, this surge of public backing. They're very pleased that public opinion polls are backing them, and they think, hey, this really might be our moment for some type of resurgence. Whether they could really capitalize on it is another question, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the battle in Wisconsin stretching out, going deep, and where it takes us. Stephen Greenhouse joins us, labor reporter for The New York Times, author of The Big Squeeze. And John Harwood is here, chief Washington correspondent for CNBC, columnist at The New York Times. We'll hear in a moment from James Taranto from The Wall Street Journal. Here's another ad from Wisconsin in the last week. The Republican Governors Association began airing an ad on Wisconsin television stations to support Governor Walker's budget plan attacking Democratic senators who blocked a quorum on his bill.
Governor Walker is leading, balancing the budget without raising taxes, so Wisconsin will be open for business again, and asking state employees to contribute to their own benefits, just like everyone else. In Wisconsin, leaders don't run away from tough problems like the Senate Democrats. Instead, they stand and lead like Governor Scott Walker.
Of course, those Democrats say they're making their stand. It's just across the border in Illinois. John Harwood, what do you make of the polls? I mean, the one we heard Governor Christie responding to there, CBS, New York Times, Americans 60% to 33% opposing weakening bargaining rights of public employees. If that is such an overwhelming position in favor, I guess, of those rights, Governor Christie might quibbles with the wording. But how does any politician look at that and say, no problem, I'm going to weaken them anyway?
Well, we know, Tom, that in the political arrangements we have now, you have macro numbers that draw from everybody in the society, and then you have particular pressures from the base of each party, and you also have the unique circumstances of the moment. So we found a similar result in our NBC Wall Street Journal poll last week. 77% of the American people said that they oppose taking away bargaining rights from public employees, that they should have the same right to bargain over pensions and benefits as private sector unions do. On the other hand, you have a moment of a felt budget crisis, both in not just in Wisconsin, but also nationally. And you have a very ideological governor, strong conservative, newly elected, at the height of his powers, deciding that he's going to use this moment to achieve a particular end. Now, he has been losing altitude in public opinion polls, but that doesn't mean he'll lose the legislative standoff. I do think, though, one consequence of those numbers that we were in our poll and the numbers that Governor Christie was talking about is that other governors, I think, will look at these results, look at this controversy, and say, I'm not sure I want a fight like that. I think that may be some of the fallout.
Well, maybe, but in Ohio today, Stephen Greenhouse, I mean, Governor Kasich there, making his big speech and a bill to restrict public employee unions and their bargaining rights, you know, moving forward in the Ohio legislature. Do you think others are going to be warned away from that move by this or encouraged to take it?
I think some will be warned away. Others who are gung-ho sort of ideologues like Scott Walker might say, aha, if John Kasich can win on this mm-hmm. in Ohio, then I'll try to do it. But you could see some moderate or even moderate conservative Republicans in Ohio and in Wisconsin getting a little weak-kneed. They say, we were elected because the economy is doing badly, because unemployment is high. Is this really part of our mandate? Are we overreaching? And I've seen quotes from Ohio state senators. I've seen quotes from some Wisconsin state senator, Republican state senators saying maybe we Republicans are going too far. One thing that's really interesting for me, Tom, is, you know, there was a poll over the weekend by a conservative think tank in Wisconsin, one that's been very supportive of Scott Walker. And it mm-hmm. said 65% of Wisconsinites want the governor to compromise and just 33% say he should dig in. And I think that shows that Wisconsinites would really be happy to see a compromise. I think they're tired of seeing their state become a poster child for polarization. They want the Democratic senators back. They want everyone to sit down and figure out a compromise. But I think that Scott Walker doesn't want to compromise, partly because he's sure he's right and partly because now he's become a national figure. And he sometimes, you know, he's likened himself in his position to Ronald Reagan. And he thinks if he could really get a slam dunk on this and win big vis-a-vis the Democrats, it will really catapult him further into the national political scene. So even though a compromise might make his constituents at home happy, I think he's really trying very, very hard to please the Republican conservative base.
Nationally, Stephen, I mean, your own newspaper has been looking at New York's problems, big fiscal problems there. Editorial over the weekend, I know that's the other side of the news editorial page line, but nevertheless, your editorial page saying, you know, New York is now paying 10 times more for state employee pensions than it did just a decade ago. In New York, public employees paying less for their health care than private sector, paying less into their pensions. And your own paper saying unions are really going to have to give ground here. Don't bust the unions, but there's going to have to be real givebacks here. Do you see labor around the country, public sector unions, taking that lesson? We know Wisconsin's ready to do that. They're ready to give up some elements. But what about nationally? Do you see unions ready to do it?
Tom, generally, yes. I read a story the other day about the controversy over many unionized retirees, public employee retirees, you know, not having to pay very much at all towards their health insurance. I interviewed a union leader in Oregon, public sector union leader, and he said, you know, we have given up much of the bargaining table to maintain this, that we've taken pay freezes 8 out of the past 16 years to maintain premium-free health insurance. But, you know, in many states, in many cities, union leaders have given, you know, two-year wage freezes, have given furloughs where they might not work 10 days a year and as a result take a pay cut of 2-3%. On the other hand, Tom, there are some unions that have dug in, and the most notable was the teachers union in New Jersey, which in the first instance told Governor Christie to get lost when he asked them to take a pay freeze. And I think they did not have their finger to the wind. They didn't realize that they would get clobbered for not being willing to agree to some shared sacrifice. But I think unions are getting the message that their states, their cities, their school districts face big budget crises and that they have to make some sacrifices. Now, they're saying it's not fair that the only ones being asked to sacrifice are the unions. They say, why don't we, for instance, you know, raise taxes on the top 1 or 2% who've been doing so well in recent years? They don't want to handle the whole burden themselves.
John Harwood, if this is a clarifying moment, watching what's happening in Wisconsin for the whole country, what's the clarity that you think may emerge from that? I mean, is it, you know, go after high-end earners as well? Is it populist anger over this gap that's pushed here between public sector workers and private sector workers? Is there a consensus that comes out of this?
No, I don't think there's a political consensus. I think we're in a process, and you can see that reflected in the ongoing negotiations between the Obama White House and the Congress of figuring out what that consensus is. And it's really much larger than the individual states and localities in their budget problems. It's national. It's the long-term budget deficits, the cost associated with the retirements of all of us baby boomers when that comes about. And where do you get to a point where, as you were just discussing with Steve, the issue of top-end tax increases? In our NBC Journal poll, we showed strong support for millionaire surtax, for letting the Bush tax cuts expire on people making over $250,000 a year. But remember, when President Obama was shooting with live bullets on that issue last year, he was unable to make that work with the with Democrats controlling Congress and Republicans with momentum in the campaign. So I think it's a long process of settling out. We've got a bipartisan group of senators. Just yesterday, Republican Saxby Chambliss of Georgia came out and said, you know what, we need more revenue as part of this equation. It's not just spending cuts. The rest of his party is not there with him right now. And until they are, we're not going to get a consensus.
John Stephen Greenhouse, please stand by. James Taranto joins us from New York. He's a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, writes the Best of the Web Today column for the opinionjournal.com. James, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
You've been quite supportive of Governor Walker, but do you think he overshot in going after collective bargaining in Wisconsin?
Well, the unions have been saying that they're willing to give back. They're willing to start paying for their pensions, put in more money for their pensions and their health benefits. They weren't saying that before Walker came out with this plan to end collective bargaining. So, no, I don't think he's overshot. I think whatever he ends up getting, it will be the result of shooting as far as he did.
Well, I mean, but if the unions have said, all right, then we'll make these concessions on pay and pensions, is it time for Walker to make a concession on the collective bargaining front?
No, because the collective bargaining is what created this problem. You have to understand, collective bargaining in the public sector is very different from collective bargaining in the private sector. In the private sector, you have the union representing workers on one side of the table and management representing shareholders on the other side of the table. There's a clear conflict of interest, and they work out an agreement. In the public sector, what you have is politicians who are often elected with the help of money from the unions sitting on one side of the table, the unions who are their constituents sitting on the other side of the table. The taxpayers during good times don't really pay much attention, and so it ends up being more a collusion, a conspiracy to steal money from the taxpayers than a real negotiation.
What do you make, then, of this Time CBS poll saying nearly 2-1 Americans oppose weakening bargaining rights of public employee unions?
I don't think people fully understand the difference between collective bargaining in the public sector and collective bargaining in the private sector, and I wish that Governor Walker and other politicians had done a better job of educating the public about that.
Do you think Walker's move here is mainly to go after the deficits current and forecast in Wisconsin, or, as many have said, is it to go after the Democratic Party via support in the unions?
Well, I think it's both, but it's very odd the way people talk about, going after the Democratic Party as if that's as if the arrangement we have now, where the government collects dues from employees who work for the taxpayers, and that money ends up funding the Democratic Party. Why should the taxpayers fund the Democratic Party? I find that difficult to defend.
Let me get a call here from Wardensville, West Virginia. Larry, thanks for calling. You're on the air, Larry.
Hi, Tom. I had a, not a solution, but an idea.
Okay.
As I understand it, nothing can happen in the Wisconsin Senate right now because they don't have a quorum.
Right.
They need at least one more senator.
Yep, which would be a Democrat, given the way it lays out.
What if the 14 senators either threatened to or actually did resign?
The Democratic senators?
Right. Wouldn't that force the governor to have a special election? And if he had a special election, couldn't they put a recall on there for the governor or possibly a referendum to stop what the governor's trying to do.
So maybe really speed things up, not even wait for a recall. I don't know if we've got the expertise here, but Stephen Greenhouse, what about it? Do you know Wisconsin law well enough at this point to know?
I think I know it halfway well enough,
okay.
There will be an effort to recall Governor Walker. The Democrats, the unions have made that clear, but they can't really get that going until he's been in office for at least a year.
Yeah.
As for having the 14 state senators resign, I think they'd look fairly silly, and I think there's a good bet that that would make it easier for Republicans to pick up some of those seats and make it that much easier for Governor Walker to push through his budget bill.
Well, also, I believe the quorum is 3/5 of all currently seated senators. I would have to double-check the Wisconsin Constitution on that, but the quorum for budget action. So I think if one of these senators resigned, that would reduce the number you need for a quorum, and the Republicans would be able to do it on their own.
And they'd be off to the races. Let's go to Bob in Bridgeport, Vermont. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just a little upset that news coverage doesn't really lay out the governor's position. Or perhaps it's the governor himself who hasn't said it well. Excuse me, there's the bird. The problem, as I understand it, was brought up in an NPR commentary I heard, which I'm pretty much just going to repeat, which was the problem is work rules, current work rules. The example cited was a local county jail that had six workers and one inmate. Costs quite a bit to keep it open. They can't shut it because they can't get rid of the workers because of union work rules.
Yeah.
This is the problem that doesn't get talked about. When I was young, we used to talk about a similar thing in what was actually a public-private union conflict, which was the railroads, the cash cow of the day. And they had to have a bylaw, union rules. They had to have a fireman on the diesel.
So, Bob, are you ready to see public sector union work rules stripped back? Do you think it's time for that?
I think that we ought to at least know that that's the issue.
Hey, Bob, what's your bird's name there?
Oh, his name is Jake.
Okay.
He hates anybody on the phone.
First time I've had a bird, a co-caller who was a bird. Bob, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Stephen Greenhouse, what about it? Is that the answer to fiscal pressure here, cut back on work rules surrounding public sector employees?
Bob, Governor Walker has focused on the cost, pensions, wages, health costs. He's hammered that far more than he's hammered the issue of work rules. I'm the guy who wrote the story about this county executive in Wisconsin who complained that it was extremely hard for him to close a children's detention center that had just one kid, just one inmate, because union rules make it very, very, very hard to lay off people. And he said that was costing his county $300,000 extra because he wasn't able because it's so hard to close it. You know, some people in the county say, let's not close it. It's good to have a detention center here. But, I and others have written somewhat about work rules, but it really hasn't been the focus of Governor Walker's attacks on the unions.
James Taranto, where do you think this ends? We've got the 2012 elections out there. Are we going to debate this right through the presidential election season? And if so, if these polls, the latest polls show support for, union rights, is that a winner or a loser for the Republicans?
Well, I think the decline of public sector unions is inexorable. I think they've reached their peak. They might have reached their peak in the first 2 years of the Obama administration. It's hard to predict how it will come out in terms of the 2012 election. But one interesting point I'd like to make, whether we're talking about work rules or overly generous pensions and benefits, all of this, there's a contradiction on the political left. Excuse me, I beg your pardon. The left wants more, wants the government to do more. But they're also defending these public sector unions, and this defensive by government unions is not about government doing more. It's about government spending more to do less. It's about making government less efficient. And so if you want government to do more, I think you really ought to turn your attention to how to get more out of government employees.
James Taranto on the Wall Street Journal editorial board, joining us there from New York. James, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the battle in Wisconsin as it stretches out, as it goes deep, stretches out right across the country, looking at where it may take this country, the fiscal situation, the political situation, our consensus or understanding or positions on where we stand. John Harwood is with us from Washington, chief Washington correspondent for CNBC, columnist at the New York Times. The Times labor reporter Steve Greenhouse is with us as well. Stephen Greenhouse, author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. I should also say you can, at our website, onpointradio.org, you can find a slideshow of national protests and counter-protests that began in Wisconsin. It's really interesting, amazing how this thing has just blown up and spread. Let's get our listeners in here. Robin in Pollitt, Vermont. Robin, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What do you think?
Thank you so much, Tom, for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned about the framing of the discussion. I just read a piece by Michael Moore this weekend. He came out and said, we're not broke, we're not bankrupt. His position is that it's really a wealth-shifting issue. And they're shifting it that it's a problem of the workers when it's really the issue is we're trying to, the wealthy are trying to maintain all of their wealth. And then his point, which I was very moved by, is that the top 400 wealthiest people in the United States are worth what 150 million of us are worth. And that this whole thing of getting us all to scramble and fight amongst ourselves is taking the emphasis away from this really, really serious situation that's going on with wealth shifting.
Robin, let us pick it up. John Harwood, what do you say to Robin's channeling of Michael Moore there? It's not about, we're not broke, it's about wealth shifting.
Well, I think you can't deny when you look at the numbers that we do in fact have serious long-term budget problems, principally related to healthcare costs as the society ages and healthcare costs keep going up inexorably. I do think, though, that we have an overlapping problem, a related problem of income inequality and distribution of wealth, whose solution is probably not affirmative redistribution by the government, but trying to figure out ways that people at the bottom of the ladder have greater capacity and greater ability to move up. And that's partly why the president has stressed education reform as such an important issue. I do want to make one related point to this, though, to Robin's point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry James is not still on the line. He was acting as if the conflict of politicians negotiating with public sector unions who donate to them being unique to that transaction. But in the system of campaign finance we have right now, you have all sorts of corporate interests and high-income individuals who donate to people's campaigns, and then the politicians go in and think and consider tax breaks for business and what the income tax rate is for the top end. So those kind of conflicts are shot through the system.
It's not just on the public union front. Stephen Greenhouse, I wonder how you look at Robin's comment, and she's channeling Michael Moore there. I mean, you wrote The Big Squeeze. Are you ready to say we're not broke? It's about wealth shifting. Are we going to have to end up somewhere in between those two perspectives?
So when I wrote my book, The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker, a few years ago, I really focused on private sector workers. And over the past decade or so, America's private sector workers have really taken it on the chin. The wages have been more or less stagnant. We've seen pensions generally getting worse, being replaced by 401ks, which aren't nearly as good. We've seen health coverage getting worse. We've seen workers being pushed to work, you know, much harder and faster and feeling more stress on the job. Job security has gone down. And all the while, generally, you know, corporate profits have soared to record levels. Productivity has gone up very, very high. And you know, that enables, you know, Michael Moore to say something is really broken here. The typical worker is not seeing things get better at all while corporations are making out like bandits. Now, one issue we haven't discussed with regard to Wisconsin, which is a big issue there, is the involvement of the billionaire Koch brothers. You know, that's become a very hot issue in Wisconsin, and it's resonated, you know, across the land in many ways.
Do you mean
the Koch brothers,
earlier support in Governor Walker's campaign? Or
yes, they gave $43,000 to Governor Walker's campaign. They gave $1 million, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, to the Republican Governors Association, and that association contributed big time to Governor Walker's victory. Americans for Prosperity, a free market group heavily supported by the Koch brothers, is in many ways the leading organization in Wisconsin in backing Governor Walker. And a lot of union people and Democrats in Wisconsin elsewhere are saying this is wrong. You know, the the Koch brothers are trying to.
And these are two brothers who I think what they're tied for fifth in the Forbes richest people in America.
I believe so. Mm-hmm. And they gave a lot of money to elect Republicans, and now they're clearly happy to see an effort to weaken unions because generous union benefits sometimes do help push up deficits clearly. But
yep.
Unions are in many ways one of the biggest sponsors, backers, factors helping the Democratic Party. And I think Republicans like libertarians like the Koch brothers are very happy to see Governor Walker go on the offensive to weaken unions.
But, John, at the same time, isn't there a genuine populist anger over these perceptions of, public sector jobs, security, and better pensions and so on? Is that just the Koch brothers pumping that up?
Well, I think the anxiety is mostly about budget problems. I don't see a lot of populist anger at school teachers or police officers or firefighters. Certainly the notion of labor unions generally are not terribly popular institutions, although the height of their unpopularity was more at the dawning of the Reagan era in national politics when he was successful in breaking the air traffic controllers union. That's when we've seen in Gallup and other surveys people believing that unions were a force impeding the economy. Now, I think everybody recognizes that unions have lost a lot of clout. They've lost a lot of membership. And so I think the populist anger is more about the state of the economy and the state of budgets at the state and national levels, and less targeting the workers individually or even in the abstract targeting the unions.
Stephen, it's public sector unions in Wisconsin, but do you see this conversation kind of spilling out of that into the general state of the American, middle class at this point? I mean, this was revved up to go after those unions and to work on the fiscal front. But could it end up being a kind of rallying point for workers across a broader front?
Yes, comma, but, Tom. We're seeing numerous governors across the country really try to tap into and perhaps create resentment against public sector workers. We've seen that. Chris Christie has been the main person on that, the leader. John Kasich in Ohio, Mitch Daniels in Indiana, Scott Walker in Wisconsin. And they're really trying to rally private sector workers, the middle class, against public sector workers. But there's been this backlash where many middle class Americans whose neighbors are teachers or firefighters, whose nephew is a police officer, say, there's something wrong here. We see these people aren't living that high on the hog. They work very hard, teaching our kids or putting fires out. Mm-hmm. And it's wrong for the Chris Christies and the Scott Walkers to try to demonize these people. So that's where I think, unions say, aha, even though we're on the defensive in a certain, peculiar way, they have their wind at their back because, not in decades have unions felt such a surge of public support behind unions and behind their efforts to, defend the middle class and defend unionized workers.
Some big cross currents out there. Brian in Nashville, Tennessee. Brian, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
One of the things that the Wisconsin situation is proving with the effort on Scott Walker mm-hmm. is that the Democrats absolutely refuse to accept the election results of 2010.
And if they accepted them, what, they'd show up, vote, take their defeat, and live with it until they could turn it around, I guess, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way the Democratic system works. The Republicans didn't walk out on Obamacare when it was being voted on, even though they would have voted against that, and they voted against it.
What about the argument that Governor Walker has overreached? Do you give that any credibility, Brian, or not?
No, I don't.
I mean, John Harwood, there's a simple American argument. I don't know if it's too simple, but Republicans won. They've got the legislature. At a certain point, the Democrats are going to have to step up, and it's sounding today like maybe at a certain point they will. But what do you say to Brian's view, John?
Well, to some degree, our two parties, which are quite polarized ideologically by historical standards, are in a state of permanent war. And so you have high tide moments like an election where you have a big victory, as the Democrats did in 2008 and the Republicans did in 2010. And then the other side regroups and figures out the most effective way to fight going forward. So you saw Republicans within a couple of months of President Obama's victory during a moment of financial crisis, providing zero votes in the House of Representatives for his economic stimulus package. They were opposed to it. They were not going to identify themselves with it. Democrats in Wisconsin are doing something similar, although they're taking a step further because they see, from the standpoint of their constituents, the unions, an existential threat in what Walker's trying to do. And so their version of tactics at the moment is to do absolutely everything possible to prevent that from passing. It has sounded in recent days as if their knees are buckling a bit and they'll come back. But again, that would be to regroup for the political fight ahead. And that's the circumstance that we find ourselves in.
But does that sort of go to James Taranto's view? If it's an existential threat, if you don't have this, if you can't provide for a particular public union, is there something wrong with that, John?
In what way?
Well, James says, look, this is kind of a closed loop. They feed the union elects them, and that's the problem with collective bargaining with public unions.
Well, yeah, that's the argument on the right. But, the Michael Moore makes the closed loop argument on the other side about campaign finance. The other thing I would say, by the way, we were talking earlier about populist anger. Mm-hmm. There was a lot more populist anger toward bankers and Wall Street executives in 2009 than there is now against public sector unions and the members of those unions.
Yep.
But we saw limits in the Obama administration for how far that populist anger translates. You saw the Obama administration pushing back against some of the populist steps that were being pushed in the Congress, and so the sentiment that exists doesn't always get translated into public policy.
Tom,
could I just add something?
Yes, please.
So, in response to Brian, one of the reasons that Governor Walker's effort to greatly weaken unions has come under such attack is that when he was running for governor last year, he never ever mentioned that he wanted to weaken, cripple, strip collective bargaining rights, and he's saying we have a mandate. We, the Republicans, have majorities in the state house and the state senate, and the Democrats are saying, "But you weren't elected on this. If you'd run on this, there's a good chance you would have lost." And now, public opinion polls show that if they were to rerun the governor's race in Wisconsin, Governor Walker would lose.
He didn't show his hand. Now he shows his hand. They're doing what they can do. Oscar in Sandown, New Hampshire. Thanks for calling, Oscar. You're on the way on the air.
Good day, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you see, Oscar?
Well, I'm a self-employed individual for over 25 years. Maybe I'm supposed to be against unions, but I'm strong for them because they do provide a service to us. But my comment is that, you have these people protesting out in Wisconsin against other people's rights. And if they want to protest, they should protest their own employer to get the same rights or better rights as these other people. It's just not American to protest against other Americans. I mean, how can you protest against a guy who makes about 25 grand, 30 grand, some of these DPW workers, to take away that money? It's just...
Oscar, we've got it, and there's others like you on Facebook here. Harmony Wu says, the question isn't why they have it so good. The question is, why do private workers have it so bad? Maybe there is energy growing on that front. Columbus, Georgia. Michael, you're on the air. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, my question is, where are the intelligent moderates? I mean, I keep hearing, there's so much stuff on the extremes. You talk about Michael Moore on the left and people like Rush Limbaugh on the right, and then... I don't know. It's driving me crazy. Is where are the really smart people that, when I was younger, it was the silent majority, and it's just like, no longer around. I was in the Army for 20 years. I work for a county government now, and I've also worked for, private companies. And I think unions, of course, some are corrupt and some are helpful.
Yep.
But, we got to compromise.
Thank you, Michael. John Harwood, what about it? Where are the intelligent moderates? Why so ideological? There's an American in Georgia who wants to figure out what we need to do here that's fair and do it. Is that not possible anymore?
It's less possible. The center is smaller in American politics than it's been in my lifetime. We will see. To take an example, the budget fight that's going on nationally, you've got six senators, bipartisan group, that is conducting private negotiations separate from the leadership, separate from what the formal process is on the Hill right now, trying to figure out whether they can sketch an area in the middle that represents a long-term solution. They probably can, because any group of smart, intelligent moderates, as the caller just indicated, can sketch out solutions to our problems. The issue is, how do you get the political machinery to move that sausage through the process? Because you have party leaderships that are responsive to their bases. You've got a president who's up for re-election in 2012. You've got Senate and House elections in 2012 as well. It's very difficult. Now, if you want to take an optimistic and a glass-half-full view, you say, as Churchill did, Americans will always do the right thing after they've exhausted every other alternative. So maybe we're in the process of exhausting the other alternatives.
Stephen, what do you see? We've just got a minute here, but if the intelligent moderates don't figure it out somewhere in the center here, are we slipping into that thing that everybody said was so un-American, class warfare? Does that become the politics?
Americans don't often see themselves as members of class. So, you know, clearly in Wisconsin, people are saying, well, there's semi-class war. The unions feel that they're at war with the Koch brothers, the billionaires. I think that, you know, a lot of, you know, it's everyone's claiming to be a moderate. Scott Walker says, you know, he's just proposing moderate, reasonable actions. You know, the unions, you know, have granted major, major concessions. They say they're being moderate. They've agreed to basically take a 7-8% cut in take-home pay. They say they're being moderate. And you know, as is often said, you know, let us, you know, sit down and reason together. But with 14 state senators in Illinois refusing to come back to Wisconsin, and Scott Walker seeming to dig in, no one's seeming very moderate right now.
The whole country is still watching, trying to figure out the way forward. Stephen Greenhouse with the New York Times, author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. Thank you for being with us today, Stephen.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
And John Harwood with CNBC and The Times. Always great to have you, John. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. See you soon.
And good news on the Life Goes Forward front here today. A new baby to a member of our staff, little Miriam. You may have heard about Marika going into labor. The baby's here. That's great. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.